The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Good morning, Human. I'm Sasha Greenbuehl, a member of this congregation. As many of you know, our very own Reverend Dave Dunn has begun his sabbatical. However, our guest minister is Reverend Kim Palmer. Kim is an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister, serving as an affiliated community minister with Human. She is a board-certified chaplain and served Emory University in the dual role of chaplain and spiritual health researcher until retiring with her wife, Marty. She continues to train chaplains and supports research projects at Emory and elsewhere as a contractor. When not working, she and Marty chip away at numerous house and yard projects and enjoy kayaking along local rivers and lakes. So, on behalf of Kim, our Director of Religious Exploration, Lexi T. Brown, Music Director Alex Peach, my fellow worship associates, and the dedicated technical team that is making today's live stream possible, I would like to welcome you to Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, which we lovingly call Human. We are a liberal faith community with the mission to nurture a spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. No matter who you are, whom you love, or where you are in your spiritual journey, you are welcome here. I would also like to note that all ages are welcome in service. There's a fidget table on the right back corner for all children of all ages, and nursery care is also available. However, there is no religious exploration this morning, but the schedule for the next several weeks is in the back of your printed order of worship. Today's second hour adult enrichment offerings are also listed. And now an announcement from the Social Justice Committee. Do you know we have a Social Justice Committee? Do you know we have a few initiatives in the works? Do you know you can participate in any of those initiatives? Do you want to learn more about what we're working on? Do you have a project that you'd like to share with us? Please join us for our new Social Justice Second Hour every last Sunday of the month, starting next Sunday, February 25th, in Fellowship Hall, Classroom Number 1. It takes a village to transform the world. On March 3rd, our guest speaker will be Mark Gebert, who leads the Roswell Insight Meditation Community that meets here at Human on Monday nights. They're having a vegetarian potluck this coming Saturday, February 24th, from 1:30 to 3:30 in the Human Fellowship Hall, and have extended an invitation for all Human family and friends to join us if you would like. Now let's welcome some announcements from the stewardship campaign.
I want to introduce our stewardship committee and talk about, we're about to kick off our stewardship campaign. So our stewardship committee this year consists of me, Laurie Wheeler, Martin Polterowski, and of course our esteemed treasurer, Jennifer Phillippe, is also on the committee. So we're shortening it this year, and so it's going to be just 4 weeks. And so we will end with a celebration on March 24th, right after service. So welcome to it. You will start hearing things from us.
Yes, so we're officially kicking off next Sunday, and you don't want to miss it. It's going to be very fun. This week, Susie, our wonderful office administrator, is going to be sending all of you your pledge statements from this current year. So you can check and see where you are. This current year ends on June 30th. The next pledge cycle will start for the next year on July 1st. And Gosh, I see all your eyes glazing over. And when I said the S word, stewardship, I saw you. But there is just no way to make stewardship exciting.
It's hard. We tried. They did it.
They made it exciting. Woo! Thank you, Chalice Choir.
The words of Sunshine Jeremiah Wolfe. This is a congregation that gathers in faith, not faith in one religion or one God or any one way. We gather in faith of the power of diversity, the power of love, and the hope of a world transformed by our care. We gather in faith in ourselves and those around us. Not a faith that requires perfection or rightness in one another. Rather, a faith that in our shared imperfection, we may learn to stumble and fall together. Faith that we will help one another to rise and to try again and again. We are Unitarian Universalists. Come, let us worship together.
Joy and grief, health and sickness, light and darkness, peace and anger, wholeness and brokenness. We each bring all of these here to this sanctuary of unity in diversity for this 1 hour of this one day and pour them out, commingling the oil of our lives to become the flame of this chalice and the symbol of our shared living faith.
I would like to step you through a brief meditation. I invite you to find a comfortable position in your chair. Close your eyes if you would like. Let's take a couple of deep breaths together. In and out. One more. In and out. Now, picture yourself in your kitchen at the counter. Imagine that you have a cutting board and knife in front of you. A lemon is on the cutting board. See it clearly in your mind's eye. Pick up the lemon. Feel its coolness and its heft. Now place it on the cutting board and pick up the knife. Watch yourself as you cut the lemon in half. Notice how the halves fall apart and you can see the juicy yellow flesh. Set one half aside. Now cut the other half in half again. Pick up a quarter of the lemon that you've just cut. See how fresh and juicy it is. Bring it to your nose and inhale. Smell its tangy scent. Now bring it to your mouth and take a bite. You may open your eyes. Could anyone see the lemon in their mind? What happened when you smelled it? Did anyone have their mouth water? Did anyone feel their face scrunch up when they bit it? For many of us, this exercise produces a physical reaction. We see it, we taste it, our mouth waters. But guess what? There was no lemon. This is the power of the mind-body connection. I wonder, in what other ways might we intentionally tune our mind to affect our body? I wish you a good morning. As you may know, I worked as a chaplain at Emory University Hospital before I retired. I provided spiritual care to patients of any religion or no religion all over the hospital, in the emergency department, the ICUs, on the cancer units, in the palliative care clinic. I also worked as a chaplain researcher, conducting studies on the impact of spirituality on health and healing. Based on my experience and from the results of my studies and studies that others have done, we find that helping people access their beliefs, values, and spiritual practices contributes greatly to their well-being. Human spirituality is woven through all aspects of our lives, including our health and how we respond to illness. Our beliefs can provide comfort, and our values can help us set priorities and make decisions. When we're afraid or upset, engaging in our spiritual practices can lead to a shift in our thinking, which can help tamp down our body's stress response and calm our nervous system. So let's look at a few ways these elements of spirituality, our beliefs, values, and practices, can be brought to bear in service of our healing. First, many people believe in a paranormal power that can be harnessed or perceived by humans, such as a personal God that responds to prayer, or a kind of fate where everything that happens to us happens for a reason, or a mystical energy that can be channeled to affect our circumstances. Many claim that spiritual belief or practice can tap into that world and affect what happens in our bodily lives. In the palliative care clinic, many of my patients were Christian and held these beliefs. They often wanted me to pray with them to change the trajectory of their illness or to bring healing. Is it effective? It depends on what we believe. But even if we don't believe in an interventionist God, don't forget the lesson of the lemon. A person's mind affects their body, and what's going on in the body affects their health. A second way that spirituality can affect our health is through the way our beliefs or practices play out in our behavior. A classic example is a study in the 1970s that compared the health of the population in Utah with that in Nevada, adjacent states that have similar climates, demographics, and levels of affluence. Despite these similarities, in the mid-2000s, Utah was one of the healthiest states in the country, and Nevada was much worse, with higher mortality rates, higher rates of cancer, and so on. Why? Because so many in Utah belong to the Church of Christ of Latter-day Saints, which prohibits the use of alcohol and tobacco. People's religious beliefs and practices can have a profound positive effect on their health, like the Latter-day Saints, or like people who adhere to a vegetarian diet, such as many Seventh-day Adventists, Hindus, and even Unitarian Universalists who may see it as a moral issue of how we treat animals. But religion can also have a negative impact on health. For example, a sect that prioritizes faith healing over medical care may have a higher mortality rate from things like infection or other treatable illnesses. In another telling example, a study in 2006 found that Baptists had greater levels of obesity than other religions. I guess it's all those potlucks. All that Sunday fried chicken and sweet tea. The third way that spirituality intersects with our health is how our beliefs and practices help us cope with illness when it occurs. And that's mostly what I'll be talking about today. People with serious or life-threatening illness often experience spiritual distress in the form of feeling isolated. The isolation may be practical. We may become unable to drive or too fatigued, medicated, or immunocompromised to get out. It becomes harder to be active, to see friends, to engage the world in our usual ways. Our isolation can also be psychological. People don't understand what we're going through. Friends don't know what to say and drift away. Our life is turned upside down. We are stuck in time with our focus on doctor's appointments, treatments, and managing side effects. For everyone else, life goes on. We can feel left behind. A buddy of mine has a chronic illness that comes with frequent debilitating fatigue. She told me about the spoon theory of illness, where you are issued a particular number of spoons for the day that represents how much energy you have. Maybe you have 10 spoons. Getting up, taking a shower, getting dressed costs 4 spoons. You get yourself something to eat. Maybe that's another 2 spoons. You haven't even started your day, and you only have 4 spoons left. You might need to go through your mail and pay some bills. Or you might need to go to the store and pick up some groceries. Maybe you have a doctor's appointment. And now your spoons are gone and you're totally shot. It's all you can do to crawl back into bed. You can see how this would be isolating. I shared the spoon theory with a woman I saw in the clinic. She had hoped to engage in a little social time with friends and had invited a few people over for Sunday dinner. She prepared a list of tasks that needed to be done before the guests arrive. Buy food, tidy up the house, prepare the meal. She had divided the list into must-dos and would-be nice categories, but even the must-dos were daunting. She feared that even with her husband's help, even limiting herself to the minimum things that needed to be done, by the time the guests arrived, she would be so tired she would have to spend the evening in bed while the others enjoyed the food and company. I asked her to think about whether she would be willing to help a friend who was sick and without energy. She said, "Yes, of course." I invited her to consider whether she could have a friend or two, perhaps from among the guest list, to help her with the labor of putting on the party. Could someone shop, chop vegetables, cook, clean? I reminded her that it makes most people feel good to help. It's a gift to be asked. She began to see her relationships as a resource she could tap so she could continue to engage in social activities and address her sense of isolation. Another person I met was determined to keep working at her job and often pushed herself to work late, even though it wasn't required. Her other people did in the office, and she didn't want to let her workmates down. But she lamented that work took everything she had, and she was just going to bed when she got home without being able to spend much time with her partner or her dogs. I invited her to think about how many spoons she had at the beginning of the day and how she might conserve some for her evenings at home. If she's running out of spoons, she could elect not to work late. Her work was supportive and flexible, so perhaps she could even leave early if she needed to conserve some spoons for later. So how does this relate to our spirituality? It's because it requires us to be reflective about our values and put them into action in our lives? Do we value connection and relationship? Do we value balance in our lives, or balance between our needs and the needs of others? Do we see ourselves as deserving of self-care? Can we overcome pride or embarrassment or fear and reach out to others for assistance? These are indeed spiritual matters. Another type of distress, spiritual distress, that's common with life-changing illness is struggle with meaning. Why did this happen to me? Why now? Why is it so hard? Many of my patients turn to their faith to find answers in the face of these questions. They find comfort in a belief that what they are going through is part of a larger plan. They believe that a loving God accompanies them and supports them on the difficult journeys. They believe that the troubles of this life will give way to an afterlife where there are no more tears and no more pain. Others struggle to find comfort in their faith. They chafe under the injustice of their situation. They shout into the whirlwind and get no answer. It's easy to believe that you have God's favor when your life is clicking along smoothly and you have everything you need. But hard times can call for a deeper theology or a new way of seeing your religious teachings. I saw a patient once who was angry at God because not only was she chronically ill, she was having one medical crisis after the next. She understood her religion to require that she trust God, that with faith she would be given abundant life, that she should always be joyful and full of praise because her place in heaven was assured. Because she was angry at God, she didn't feel like she could pray, which she normally did as a way of coping. She just wasn't in a place of praise and thanksgiving. I asked her whether she thought it would be okay to take her anger and despair to God. She looked like that had never occurred to her. I told her the Bible models how to express very raw emotion in prayer, feeling unfairly treated, ignored, or abandoned. I gave her some examples from the Psalms. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? I am overwhelmed with troubles. I am like one without strength. I am set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? I have wept until I am exhausted. My throat is dry and hoarse. My eyes are swollen with weeping, waiting for my God to act. Even those of us who don't believe in a God who can change the course of an illness might resonate with this feeling. I trusted in what the doctors told me. Why am I still sick? How long will this take? These side effects make me feel worse than when I began. How will I ever be better? This is horrible. How can I endure? Railing against God or medicine or your rotten luck won't fix all your problems, but it's healthy to get those feelings off your chest through prayer or journaling or talking to a trusted friend or therapist. When we stop stuffing our emotions inside, we make space for spiritual healing and moving toward a more positive attitude. And science shows us that this can affect our bodies. Another common area of spiritual struggle arises from losing functional ability and independence and losing a sense of purpose in life. This is often the most wrenching and the hardest to accept. I hear people tell me, I can't do anything. I feel useless. What is the purpose of my even being here? I think there are two ways our spirituality can help us cope. First is by thinking about whether we can adjust our attitude to make the best of a bad situation. What do our beliefs tell us about accepting the inevitable? I think of the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Or consider the Buddhist concept of suffering and attachment. There's a Buddhist parable about the second arrow. It's about how difficult things happen to us in life, like getting sick or losing our job or having someone we love die. It's like life shoots us with an arrow. But when we dwell in the past, thinking about what we've lost or what we've done or not done, or when we worry about the future, it's like we shoot ourselves with a second arrow. Some of our suffering is inevitable. It's part of the human condition. But our reaction to our situation can add unnecessary suffering. Buddhists call it voluntary suffering. This is a spiritual lesson we can draw from in seeking to change our own attitude and behavior. Rather than dwelling on what we can no longer do, can we find meaning in what we can do? I saw a patient one time who went to the doctor's office with a random chest pain and found out that she had late-stage metastatic cancer. She was young, in her 50s, and had never been sick before, other than the typical cold or stomach bug. Over the course of the year, she had surgery, radiation, and now a very aggressive chemotherapy. And it left her so fatigued that she couldn't do much. She had to quit her job. Friends helped her shop, helped cook her meals, and came over to help keep her house clean. She had nothing but time on her hands, and initially she fell into a depression. But she told me that she couldn't just stay in bed. It wasn't her. So she farmed herself out as an event planner to friends and family. She could do her consultation by phone or email when she felt up to it, and order materials online, even in the middle of the night when she was having trouble sleeping. She even purchased a love seat from Goodwill for one of her events and reupholstered it, even though she had never done it before. It took her 2 months, doing it bit by bit when she had energy. She said, "Working on these projects takes my mind off the cancer. It gives me a sense of purpose and makes me feel like I'm still contributing." Another patient had a condition that kept him in constant pain. He was in his 70s and his condition was likely to be terminal. Because of his pain, he wasn't able to move around or play with his grandchildren or even do much to take care of himself. He said, "It's such a burden on my wife. I can't do anything to help her. I can't really do anything at all. I just sit in the recliner all day with the TV on, and the medication makes me sleep a lot. I feel so useless." I explored with him what he was able to do, even with his limitations. Could he sit in his recliner with a pad and write down stories about his life for his children and grandchildren? Usually children don't know much about their parents' own childhoods. Could he write stories about that? Write about his love for him or his hopes for his grandkids? Writing about his experiences is something he could do intermittently when he's awake and feeling up to it. I told him how valuable that kind of record can be to a family after someone is gone. I could see the wheels turning in his head. He said, "I've never told him about my time in the military or what it was like when I grew up." His eyes opened wider as another thought occurred to him. "I have a box of old photos in my brother's basement. I could have him bring those over, and I could write on the back of each one the people and the places that they depict." I could see the change in his demeanor. He sat up a little straighter. The strained look was gone from his face. He had found something he could do that helped him feel valuable. Another thing we might remember when we're feeling useless or feeling like a burden is whether we are committed to our first principle, affirming the worth and dignity of every person. Do we know or know of others who have become partly or fully incapacitated? Anyone who has become paralyzed, who had a stroke, or went blind, or has dementia? Anyone who is unable to take care of themselves and has to rely on others? Our first principle tells us these people still have human worth and dignity, and that they are deserving of the help they need. Let us not forget that we ourselves are worthy of that same consideration. Our condition may require that we accept the help of others. That's the hand that we've been dealt. Feeling like a burden? That's the second arrow. I hope I've been able to give you a sense of the spiritual resources available when illness strikes. Our connections to family and friends, our ability to find meaning and purpose despite our condition, the wisdom of our faith and the faith traditions of others, and our search for peace and acceptance. Whether or not a medical cure is available to us, we can bring our beliefs and values to bear in service of our spiritual healing. We can live lives of integrity and engagement, making our own unique contribution to the world, seeking love and serenity as we live out our Unitarian Universalist faith, whatever our circumstances.
Please join me as we extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Wherever we are in our stuck places, let us show ourselves compassion. And let us also remember that, despite what hand we are dealt in life, we have the power to turn our mind toward what is good, what is doable, what is available. Go in peace. May the weak be kind to you.
Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.